maybe tell me where you were born and when, and just go on from there.
Well, I was born in Anchorage, February 8th, 1922. And the reason I guess I was there was because my father was a civil engineer with the Alaska Railroad Construction, and brought our family up from the States, from Washington in 1920. The other five kids in the family and my mother. Although he'd been in Alaska since 1914, and he'd made a number of trips back to the States. And then we came to Fairbanks in 1824 after the completion of the railroad. My dad went into the old Alaska Road Commission as a civil engineer and locating roads and that sort of thing. And I've been here ever since. But you were talking about the thoughts that people might have concerning their life in Fairbanks, how your feelings, I imagine, is what you were maybe thinking of. I don't know, I never was too bound up with sadness or any of that thing for any length of time. I've had things happen that weren't too nice, but somehow or another I struggled through them. But I like to think, of course, most people do, that I think that they seem to think of the past in the good times, and a lot of times the bad times they try to, I guess, are pushed into the background or covered up or anything, and you don't bring them up too often. But I always remembered the people that were good to me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They seemed to be kind of outstanding in my life, the people that didn't have to, but they did nice things for me, you know. They were kind, you know. But I think that's a wonderful quality in a person, kindness, I guess.
Yeah.
It's shown lots of times these days, but lots of times it could be, and it isn't, I guess. But I remember that a lot of the people that were kind to me, they seem to stand out like lights or something in your life, in my life, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think back. But people that didn't have to be, but they were nice to me and helped me along the way. Maybe helped me a little bit to think of other people sometimes, too, and I'm naturally kind of a selfish person.
Look at you all.
Somehow or another, I grasp that every once in a while and think, well, I should do this or something for somebody because somebody has done things for me like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose they went through the same kind of thing. But I remember the old man that used to live pretty close to us there. He was an old, he sawed wood around town, and when he had a little bit of money, he'd prospect out in the, around Pedro Dome.
Mm-hmm.
He used to monkey around out there in the hard rock. And he was, I suppose he was probably up in his 60s when I was only about 7 or 8 years old. I don't know for sure, but I suppose he was. And he lived in an old cabin there, just a couple of houses from our place on off of 3rd and Cowles. His backyard was literally covered with all sorts of different pieces of machinery, most of them broken.
Mm-hmm.
Oddball things, 5 gallon cans full of junk, you know, and half full of water, rusty parts laying in there, and all kinds of that kind of stuff in his backyard, gas boxes and everything. And I used to go over there and monkey around, and he never bothered me, never ran me off or anything, you know. And he had foxes there, fox pen next to his house. In those days, nobody, we didn't have all these complicated rules and regulations. And he had foxes, and we used to have a sleeping porch, and we used to go up there at the end of April, usually start sleeping up there, just one porch on top of the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nice deal. Of course, there wasn't a lot of racket and noise and all this kind of stuff. pretty quiet. Boy, you could sleep like a log, especially when the trees were green, you know. Seemed like you got more oxygen or something.
Yeah.
And but every once in a while, if the breeze happened to come along just right, you got a big whiff of those fox pens. And it wasn't too nice. But finally, he got rid of the foxes.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave him a dog that was a cross between a husky and an Airedale.
Mm-hmm.
And he raised a bunch of those dogs. Pretty soon he had more dogs than he knew what to do with. He had a great big pen for them there. And he used to take those dogs out to Pedro Dome with them, and they got wild out there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them never came back. I guess mm-hmm. people had to destroy some of them. But anyway, he was always nice to me, you know. And he had an old Fortune tractor. In the summertime, he had two of them, actually. One of them had a disc behind the front wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd disc up gardens before they had the cultivator equipment they got today, you know. You know, he's either that or he shoveled it by hand, you know. And he used to get our old place, our backyard. And he cut wood for us, too. He had another tractor, a Fortune tractor, with a wood saw on the front of it, you know. He was pretty busy all the time. And somebody said that he was a mining engineer, that he'd graduated from some Canadian university, if possible. Kind of a quiet sort of a man.
You never know with people.
But he was always nice to me, mm-hmm. you know. And mm-hmm. I could go over and monkey around his backyard. It was full of old Ford parts and stuff, you know, for his old truck. He had an old Ford flatbed truck. He'd put all those dogs in the back of it, take off for his vacation on wheels.
Aren't people funny? The things that fit in your mind growing up.
Yeah, but I remember one time I was looking through his cans here, you know,
uh-huh.
and there was a .22 stuck in there, little .22 rifle, Stevens. And it was all rusted up, you know, and everything. And I asked him, I said, "Say, can I have that?" And he said, "Yeah, it's no good, it's all rusted up, you know." So I took it home, and I'd watch my brother monkey around with his .22 a little bit, and his was all wore out too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I oiled the thing up and got the hammer to going back and forth and the firing pin to work, and I thought I'd try it. I never even shot a gun before, I don't think. But I got one of his shells and stuck in the thing and took it out in the backyard and shot it, you know, and it went through the mm-hmm. barrel. Every barrel was rusty, too. Boy, it was rusty. Mm-hmm. But I had to shove the cartridge out with a rod, you know, I don't know. I got a piece of heavy wire someplace and we got it, but it worked, you know. But you remember those kind of people like that, I think.
You think you think people were different in those days, or do you think it's just...
Well, I think they took a little more time with you.
Mm-hmm.
People seem, a lot of friends of mine are just too busy.
Mm-hmm.
They're so darn busy, they don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing there is people. It
mm-hmm.
isn't things.
Mm-hmm.
But we get so tangled up in trying to make more money, or
mm-hmm.
have something, some material thing that seems to be so terribly
mm-hmm.
important, when the real thing, to me, the most important thing is people. I think you got that in your head,
yeah,
too. And we overlook that, and we
mm-hmm.
spend too much time, I think way too much time, monkeying around with material things and not enough time talking to one another and,
mm-hmm.
and helping one another along life's
yeah,
way. You know. But maybe I'm old-fashioned, probably real old-fashioned, but I think that's one thing we miss.
Mm-hmm.
We got so many amusements and entertainments, you know, things to take up our time that
mm-hmm.
we miss that.
We miss it, but none of them, a lot of them aren't just human contact. And if you don't get that, you don't get anything.
Yeah, I know it.
Yeah. So you grew up here, went to school here, and...
Yeah. Old Algo over there, her brother was my grade, you know.
Oh, is that right?
Alfred, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's a real, they were a nice family, real nice people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I used to stop over there after school with him a lot of times, and his mother would always make us a cup of cocoa and give us a couple of cookies. They were from Germany,
mm-hmm.
the folks, fine people. Old Pete Steger was a little guy, but he was an August dad, but he was a fine man, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Little bit of a guy, powerful man. He used to pack all over the country prospecting, you know. And then he worked for the FE and different mining companies.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever do any mining?
A little bit of monkeys around here.
Mm-hmm.
But he was another guy that would stand and talk to you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I was a kid, I got along a lot of times better with the older people than I did with people my age, because mm-hmm. I like to talk to people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times my friends was too busy to, maybe they weren't interested in what I had to say, I don't know. But
kids aren't known for their tolerance, you know, I mean.
Yeah. But I had friends. I had lots mm-hmm. of friends when I was a kid. But I mean, when I got older, even when I was in my 20s and 30s, I had a good relationship with people in their 70s, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which is a little different, maybe.
Yeah.
You know.
So when you went to school here and you got on with your life, what did you do mm-hmm. in those days? I mean,
well, about this time of year, my brother-in-law, I got my driver's license 50 years ago, in 1935.
Mm-hmm.
I was only 13.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
there was no age deal.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
you had to do was give the old city clerk, Grace Fisher, give her a dollar, and she'd give you a driver's license, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I probably could have got by without one, because there was only one cop in town anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he was a new guy. They'd gotten up from the States. And he'd been a policeman down there for years, and he wore a uniform. First time we saw anybody wear a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
He brought his old uniform, but he finally got rid of it, you know. I guess he felt out of place. Fairbanks.
I think that's lovely. Because everybody would know who he was anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before that, though, there was another old guy. His name was Austin Gibbs.
Mm-hmm.
And Austin Gibson was a big, heavy man, and he'd say, "Kid, come here," you know, and you'd go over there and he'd hand you a quarter, you know. A lot of those old-timers would do that with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're nice to the kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when they built this building here, when they had the old wooden building when I was mm-hmm. just a kid, but I remember when they tore it down. My brother worked on the construction of this deal all the way through to pretty much to the end of it. He was just up here a couple of weeks ago.
How many brothers did you have?
Just one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they awarded him that Alumni of the Year deal mm-hmm. out there at the university. But he's a lot older than I am. He's 75, but in excellent health. He runs all the time, plays tennis and all that kind of stuff. But I got to get back to that deal about mm-hmm. going uptown. I knew a couple of the kids that used to bug the drunks uptown, you know. Hey, give me a dollar. Give me 50 cents. They would. A lot of times they would, too.
Oh,
I never tried it. If my mother or dad had caught me, they'd kill me. There was one old-timer. His name was Johnny Sear. He was a French-Canadian, and he used to come over and see my dad all the time. And he almost got fired over at the road commission one time. My dad helped him get his job back, and he thought he liked my dad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, but old Johnny Sear would come to town on the 4th of July every summer. That was the only day they had off, you know.
Wow.
We only had the one day off in the summer. Road commission would take all the guys into town and have one day, and then we'd go back. I worked for him later on in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But old Johnny would come over, and I was about 7, 8, 9 years old. And every 4th of July, he'd give me a silver dollar, you know. And one time he was about ready to leave, and he hadn't given me the dollar. So I said, "Hey, Johnny, you know, you forgot to give me the dollar. My mother just about killed me." Gee whiz, I never heard the end of that.
Oh, that, I can understand your mother.
I can't do it.
And yet you're a kid, it's very natural. I mean, you forgot the dollar. It's the important thing that happened on this day.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they sit there for hours listening to this conversation, waiting, and then
the dog's
about to leave.
But the old-timers were good to the kids, mm-hmm. real good, you know. He gave me a pocket watch one time. He used to be a cat skinner for the old road commission.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a pocket watch, one of those West Block pocket watches with a watch fob with a 60 cat on it. And I had that watch fob for years,
mm-hmm.
you know. So finally the thing wore down so bad on the mm-hmm. top that it fell off. You know,
mm-hmm.
I should have just taken it off, but I had that old thing for years. I worked on heavy equipment for years, and the only guys that did, they wore the, had the pocket watch like this one here, you know, with a watch fob on. But he was a nice old guy, French Canadian. He went down to the Pioneer Home in Sitka before they had this Pioneer Home here.
Mm-hmm.
And they said he entertained the people down there. He did a real good job of keeping people lively, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He used to make tops, big tops, oh, that big around, you know, with a, make it out of, he tried all different kinds of things. He'd glue wood together and bark and everything else. He'd have a nail on the bottom and he'd wrap a string around that thing, and boy, he could do anything with one of them. He's real good at it, you know, made them for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Real nice old guy. But I knew a lot of those old timers. They were, like I say, they were real nice to the kids. We used to have 4th of July races right down here on 2nd Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Whole town would be there. Everybody's going to. They didn't have any rules for firecrackers. There'd be firecrackers going off all every place, you know. Nobody paid any attention to it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go on for a week before the 4th of July, you know. And, yeah, we didn't have all these regulations. That's one thing I don't like. They got so darn many regulations now, you can't hardly do anything.
That's true.
Before you do anything, you got to call up the borough or the city or something or the state to find out if it's legal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're just putting an outhouse up behind your cabin for the love of Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of nonsense, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, I know I used to go in those races on the 4th of July. That was a big deal. The miners would come into town, you know, the FE company bunch and everybody would come in. And, of course, it wasn't a very big town, but we thought it was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd have those races right down here on 2nd Avenue, pie eating contest, you know, and sack races and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I won a couple of bucks a couple of times.
So,
in those things.
Did you consider go through school and then continue to stay here? And
yeah, I got graduated from high school in 1939, and went to college one semester, and then I don't know. I just wasn't ready to settle down for college. Yeah. I built a little shack when I was 18 years old, and. Down here on the west end of town, just a little cabin down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived there for a couple of years, and then was working on heavy equipment out at Ladd Field. Up till 1943, they gave me a couple of deferments and finally drafted me and just put me back doing the same thing till the war was over. Yeah. And after the war, I worked out there for about a year and a half, and then as a foreman on heavy equipment, and I went in with a couple other guys, and we started a little construction business, and we put in the streets over in Hamblin Acres and did a lot of clearing around, and the homesteads were, the guys were homesteading after World War II, you know, and did the first clearing for the Golden Valley. We had a couple of cats, and we did a lot of that kind of stuff, moved a lot of houses around here, dragged them around right down the streets on skids and everything else. You could still do that then, you know.
Uh-huh.
You could walk a cat right down 2nd Avenue in here, nobody pay any attention to you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There, well, the NC Cat Shop was just around the corner here, where their men's deal for Nordstrom, that used to be the NC Cat Shop. We used to walk our cat right in there, right down the street.
Mm-hmm.
There was no pavements, you know.
Okay, no pavement, yeah.
Then I sold out. I bought my partners out, and I worked it myself for a long time. I did a lot of work out at Eielson and Fort Wainwright and in the surrounding area here. And for the subcontracting from the Department of Highways, and worked for Rivers Construction and Burgess and Reed and Martin, a lot of the contractors around here, PK. MK, all of them, did dirt work for them. And then I finally sold out and I moved down to Port Angeles, Washington. I've been playing music all the time, and we bought a music store there, and I worked on construction for almost 2 years, and then I sold out to my partner and moved back up here.
Yeah. Didn't like it out there?
60, 70. Yeah, it was all right, but it was hard to make a living there.
Mm-hmm.
Tough in there, in that area. I could have got by, but I just got tired of monkeying around. When the geese started going north in the spring, I got itchy feet and came back. I did a lot with, I played in the nightclubs for years.
Mm-hmm.
And made big, good money playing instruments, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I played tenor sax, and you know, I played in the Salvation Army band, too, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Different bands, different groups. During the war, I played in a special service band, Army special service band, too. But I didn't do it all the time, we just played at nights, you know, practice at nights, and we play for dances or marches or whatever they had.
Mm-hmm.
But then I worked for a guy for 7 months one time for nothing to learn that repairing instruments, which is kind of a specialized trade.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
And I still do that. I've been doing that for 25 years in my spare time. It's a pretty good little deal, you know. Nobody really around here. There's one girl, Carl Carlson's daughter, went through some training there in Spokane. But she doesn't repair the big instruments, just the clarinets and flutes and the light stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I've worked on everything one time or another. No electronic stuff. But also I went to work on heavy equipment for the Department of Highways for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Until 74, and then I went into the Salvation Army as Salvation Army officer. When I became a Christian in 1971. And I've stayed with them really in their activities ever since. I worked for the university for about a year and a half out there too. But that pretty much covers the general description of what went on, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
If you need any more details, I'll have to start looking.
Well, okay, I'll start asking you some questions. Actually, I like it when you just sort of ramble on, because you say a lot more than I can say specifically. Well, I'd like to know a few highlights in your life, things that you thought were really special. Married to you a lot?
Yeah. Well, I was married twice. My first wife, I was really in love with her, and she's a beautiful woman. But we were married for almost 3 years, and then when I went in the Army, she kind of got dissatisfied just before I got in and took off with another fellow, and I kind of felt bad about that for a long time, which was kind of hurt. But I found another gal that was probably the right one. I should have married the first time. And we've been happily married for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably was the highlight of my life, because I never thought I was able to get back on track again after that first deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we've had a wonderful life together, my wife and I. We adopted three boys and raised them, and they're all getting by. So that's about all a guy could expect in that particular thing, I guess.
What would you say were the things that influenced you the most in your life?
Well, I kind of went the way I felt most of the time, instead of disciplining myself to do things I should do.
Well, I don't know. That, but, you know.
I should have gone back to college, which I regretted a lot of times. My brother was always bugging me about it, and I never went back. But I did get quite an education in the Salvation Army work.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in their training, they had a pretty strict training deal for auxiliary captains, which my wife and I both took. And we had about a year, 13 months training course there that was pretty comprehensive. And then I think working out in the jail ministry, which I've had for about 10, 11 years now, has been pretty interesting, you know. It's, I should go out there more than I do. I go out, I have two services a month there. I had one last Sunday. But somehow or another, I am able to relate to the to people that are down and out.
Mm-hmm.
When we had the Salvation Army shelter, I did a lot of talking to the guys there, tried to help them get straightened out.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them responded and some of them didn't, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But I made a lot of friends with those people, and also out of the jail. I got a lot of friends out there. And I think that's an interesting part of my life, was involved in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think that living in Alaska influenced a lot of your lifestyle, your way of thinking, as compared to how it would be if you were outside?
Oh, I suppose it has. Yeah, I suppose it has. I think most people, I think all of us, some way or another, we hit our highest marks when we're struggling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We do the, and it's always been a struggle up here to get by. So, I mean, just to survive the long winters is a struggle. So we do. It isn't like, when I go down to the States, I always feel guilty in the wintertime and I'm not up here suffering with everybody else, all my friends. I think it has an effect on you. It might make you a little more independent in a way, although that looks like our government's trying to destroy that as much as possible, even our local governments, you know. It's pretty hard to do things that are a little different without getting jumped on anymore, even if it's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Everybody has to be regimented and the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the least bit different, why?
Well, everybody wants to turn this into a Seattle.
Yeah, and that's the trouble. Mm-hmm. The people that people come up here, you know, and they liked the way it was, the free style and everything. But they weren't here very long, and they tried to get on the city council or the borough or something and try to make it exactly like what they were happy to get away from,
mm-hmm.
for some reason. And then after a couple of years, they left and left us with all the garbage that was piled up while they were here.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like it happened a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I like the way it used to be before they had the minorities and all this kind of thing, when everybody was equal here. Now we're not, a lot of us aren't equal anymore.
The majority isn't equal.
Hmm?
The majority.
Say that is because a lot of people think statehood was great, but they never were, a lot of them weren't here when it was a territory.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 10 times the freedom up here when we were territory, as far as I'm concerned, than we did to do as a state.
Yeah.
A lot of people had voted for statehood. I voted for statehood too, but I really wasn't informed of what we were getting into, you know. And if I had had to do it over again, I would have voted against it. And an awful lot of people I know would have too.
Mm-hmm.
We used to be able to get a homestead up here, any place practically, you know. Any place you wanted to go, you could get a homestead, just about, you know. But now, that's awful hard to do. The homestead areas are selected for you. You can get a homestead in this little area right here, but you can't over there, you know. That's all tied up with the federal government, or the state's got it, or something. And I think that if you don't, the freedom really is owning your own piece of land, and not
mm-hmm.
being worrying about having to pay taxes on it and all this kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
which we've gotten super involved in,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think that the veterans, even in the Vietnam veterans, were kind of cheated out of a lot of the benefits that they should have gotten. At least I haven't heard of much that they've gotten. And I think they should have been allowed to have a piece of land like after World War II. You could come up here, and if you were a veteran, you could get 160 acres, and all you had to do was clear 20 acres. you know. They made it real easy, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think they should have done that. We got millions of acres of land up here, and you can't get any of it.
I know.
It's all tied up. What's the sense of that? Doesn't make any sense to me, mm-hmm. you know. But they make it real hard. And if, like, we have a little piece up to Gina Hot Springs Road, a little over three acres, which amounts to practically nothing, in the floodplain, where the state, when they did put a lot of this land up, it seemed like they picked the poorest land to let go first so the old-timers could get that. Yeah, that's the way it works out.
Yeah, I know.
And down where we're at, it was all set up where you got the land from how long you'd been in Alaska, you know. And so the old-timers, a lot of them, put in for that. It was 10 tracks right there where we're at. Up across the road, there was a lot of good land going up the west fork or the east fork of the Chena.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good land on that east fork, but it was all, you had to pay the real estate price, $25,000 for 3 acres of land.
Yeah.
I mean, a real super real estate price, way up.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's right myself. I think we should have much more freedom as far as obtaining land is concerned,
mm-hmm.
and get away from these putting real estate operators on the boards all the time, you know, on the commissions. Mm-hmm. Just like our school board here. There's only one person on there that doesn't belong to the National Education Association.
Mm-hmm.
Only one person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The rest of them are all paid. They were paid. Their advertising and everything, their campaign was all paid for by the National Education Association.
Hmm.
So it's run just the way they want it to run.
Hmm.
That's why we have the situation we have. Some of them in the school, I don't think it's right myself. There's only one guy on there that, one minister, he stayed on there this time. I can't think of his name. He used to be down at the Carriage North for a long time. These. The only one that's not doesn't belong to it.
Hmm.
The union set up.
mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think we should be. Well, it should be a lot easier to get land up here than it is. They're making out like the borough and the state and each one of them is a real estate business. You know.
I know.
It isn't supposed to be that way.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything you'd do differently in your life?
Well, I suppose there's quite a few things I'd do differently, all right.
You thought everybody's so honest.
The list would be tremendous, I guess. I made a lot of mistakes.
Well, I think everybody does, but I don't know whether they're in the end, whether they're really that.
Well, I mean a lot of it. I drifted along. I'm entirely different from the rest of members of my family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the oddball.
Mm-hmm.
My brother, he's got a good education.
Mm-hmm.
When he went in the Army during World War II, he went in as an officer, and I went in as a private. See?
Mm-hmm.
I just looked at life different than he did, and he can't understand that. You know?
Mm-hmm. But I think looking at life differently is good. I think we need a lot of people looking at life very differently.
Yeah.
I think we need all perspectives.
Well, I suppose. But I know I should have done things a lot different than I did. I wished I'd have gone to college and graduated.
Yep.
But I don't think I'd have had any more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot. I like to make things mm-hmm. with my hands. And think things out that are different, you know. And I like to paint like you do.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And I like to do a lot of different things, make stuff out of iron. I want to do it. I've done a little sculpture work out
mm-hmm.
of iron and that.
Very good.
Just for the fun of it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's enjoyable making things. I like to work in the welding shop and make up my own ideas.
Mm-hmm. College isn't for everyone. I mean, look at
everybody looks at it different. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously work very well with your hands.
Well, my dad was good with. He was an excellent draftsman and
mm-hmm.
made a lot of maps and stuff like that. My oldest sister was a good artist, and they also was a map
mm-hmm.
maker. And did a lot of this kind of stuff. My dad could print, and you'd think it came out of a machine. You'd never know that it was done by hand.
Oh my.
is printing on maps. I ought to show you. I should have brought one of them. I got copies of them.
Well, I'll be seeing
you. You'd think they were it was done with a typewriter or something, but he did it all by hand, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you describe your life as being generally a happy life?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My brother and my sister, two sisters that are alive now. I lost two sisters. But the two sisters that are alive got after me the last time they were together. They said, "You make a joke out of everything. Don't you ever get serious about things, you know?" And, you know, every time we talk about something, you always make a joke out of it. I said, "Boy, if that's all you can criticize me for, I'm happy as a clam."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's about all you get out of life anyway, is a little humor once in a while. Fortunately, the Lord stuck that in there. We'd
mm-hmm.
be pretty drab.
It really would.
Pretty miserable.
And I think laughter's very, very important.
Yeah.
What are things you enjoyed the most in life? Or things you didn't enjoy? Or let's get the things you enjoyed first. The music?
Mm. Yeah, I like that. Just like anything else, though, you know. If what I used to play, and when I played all the time and tried to keep up with the current music that was coming out all the time, it got boring too. When you're playing 4 or 5 hours a night or 6 hours, and just one tune after another, and mm-hmm. get 15 minutes off and do the same thing over again. It's anything that's monotonous gets to me.
Mm-hmm.
I've run all different kinds of heavy equipment, drag lines and cranes and bucket loaders and graders and cats and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it always gets monotonous to me after a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know? And I don't like that. That's one reason I quit out at the university there.
Mm-hmm.
I got to have things where I'm using my mind, or I get to,
mm-hmm.
it really bugs me in a big hurry. And even no matter how much money I'm getting, it isn't
yeah.
worth it. And I
yeah,
cut it off.
Mm-hmm.
I could be doing real well right now. I can go down to Union Hall and get right back on the... Mm-hmm. I'd get out in a few days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to do it because I know I'm facing that again.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you're getting almost $30 an hour, you know, it isn't worth it.
No, it isn't.
Just, not to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have that big a pension or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just get very skimp by on my pension.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather do what I want to do, you know, at the time. During the day, I fix instruments a little bit every couple of days, and
mm-hmm.
and I can do it when I feel like it, and,
mm-hmm.
and then I can make some jewelry if I want to, or I can paint a picture, or work mm-hmm. in the yard, or go up to the cabin, or anything, and I guess got enough to get by.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's all you need.
Yeah,
you know.
I could go out and make the big money again if I want to. They call me up from a university and want me to come back out there, and give me a little raise there, but I don't like the monotony of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It bores me, and I don't create anything. There's nothing new. I just don't have the mind for that. My mind is more or less creative, like yours,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I don't want to be bored by that. I don't get bored painting pictures,
no,
unless
not.
I want to paint the same one over and over
mm-hmm.
again or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You'd get bugged by it. But,
do you think perhaps living here had something to do with that? I mean, it's hard to get bored when you live here because the climate, the weather is so different all the time anyway.
Well, you had to make something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like when you get older, you have to discipline yourself to do things or you won't do it. You'll be sit back and be entertained by the TV or whatever. You know, it's easy to do that. I can see that. It's a read or whatever. And you won't be creative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you won't be doing anything important. At least it's important.
Yeah,
to me.
If you don't really give yourself a kick.
So
yourself.
I have to boot myself and get moving, or I'm
glad I got you two out of bed this morning.
I was up late last night. I was reading that PT 109 again.
Oh, okay.
Kennedy's mm-hmm. deal. You know, I hadn't read that. I read it years ago, and I happened to look there in my book rack, and there it was sitting around. I'm
mm-hmm.
going to read that again.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
So once I started reading, I can read awful fast. Mm-hmm. And I never took any course in it. But I read so much when I was a kid that I just picked it up naturally. Mm-hmm. And I just read a line at a time, really. Probably mm-hmm. you do too. A lot of people mm-hmm. get that way. You know, and you can read fast and you can absorb most of it, yeah. you know. I even read Robinson Crusoe over here a while back. I hadn't read it for years, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But and, it's fun to read them again.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. It's fun to read them again.
Yeah.
Reading's very important, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I was stressed out with kids.
I was interested in Ellsberg's writings and things like that. Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis. And I read a lot of good mm-hmm. stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have a big library at home, and I read just about everything in there. Matthew Henry's commentary on the Bible and Adam Clark's commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Barclay, I read most of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember everything I read, but my wife will be sound asleep and I'll read for 2 or 3 hours after she goes to sleep.
Yeah.
But I don't do that just to take up time or to be amused. I try to get something out of it when I read it. Even the story of Robinson Crusoe, I hadn't read that for years. I see that old book up there and I dragged her down and
mm-hmm.
went through it. That's really a Christian story, you know.
Yes, it is, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah. I had
and Treasure
it.
Island, I read that again.
Oh, yeah.
I've read that 3 or 4 times.
I had a boy reading that too.
Yeah.
I get
to. Does he read that?
Oh, yeah.
That's great stuff. Yeah,
yeah, he reads all
I used to read Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn and all those kids when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You thought you were right there on the raft with them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
what a great trip that was.
Yeah. I'm always afraid that the boys are going to take off and do something. And thinking of let me get my thoughts together here. Do you think that part of why your life has been the way it has is that you maybe took risks or took chances when the opportunity came along, or?
I don't know. I don't think I took too many risks that way.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a heavy equipment operation isn't the most safest thing in the world, but I was always awful careful when I worked
mm-hmm.
around equipment. I was a welder for a long time. I worked as a welder a lot, did a lot of work for the highway department as a welder over there. But I when it didn't go in to hire out as a welder, I hired out as an operator, but they knew I'd
mm-hmm.
done some of that, so they had you do
mm-hmm.
anything that would help the job along, you know, which I like to do. I'd rather do that than just say, well, the only thing you can do is run that rig there and that's all, you know, like the union has it set up on
mm-hmm.
some jobs.
Oh, yeah.
You
yeah.
can't do that. That's yeah. kind of miserable. But I don't know. I never thought about the work being too hazardous, what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I can see a lot of times where you could have an accident. I
mm-hmm.
always tried to be careful, so I never lost any fingers yet or anything like that, like a lot
yeah.
of guys
mm-hmm.
have,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I started on equipment when I was only 15 years old,
oh,
you know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But all the kids were, well, all of them that were out that camp were in those days were older than I was. But they were only a year older, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them, to my knowledge, ever got killed or anything like that on the job, even though there was a lot of high school kids working, driving trucks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And dump trucks. And
do you think that a certain type of individual is shaped here by just the living conditions? Do you think that it influences you and maybe your character a bit, or how you proceed with your life? Or
well, I don't know how I'd put that. I know you could see by the clothes I wear, really,
mm-hmm.
that I'm not living in this age right today. Because this nobody buys these anymore. I got that out of the thrift store.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a part of the original Alaska tuxedo.
Oh, really?
That's yeah. the original one. Yeah, that's a Filson coat.
Mm-hmm.
And they cost about $150 now, if you can find one.
Gosh.
You can order one special. But I got that out of the thrift store here a while back. In fact, I got, when I was Salvation Army officer, I got three or four of them, and I bought them from the store, and then I gave them to friends of mine that couldn't find them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they were too expensive. They just,
mm-hmm.
old-timers that wore theirs out. But they always liked that, and it's kind of a representative of the old Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
See, but I'm still wearing that. And I wear a pocket watch with a watch fob, which is...
Yeah.
Kind of living in the past, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you
but you see that watch there belonged to an old trapper, old Ted Leonard, and he was a real good friend of ours. He knew my wife when she was just a kid, and he used to come over to the house quite often and have dinner with us, or stayed in our house when we went out on a trip someplace or something. And we were always good friends. And when he died, why, his sister came up here, and he only had a little suitcase full of junk. He didn't have hardly anything. He had an old Volkswagen bus, and he called a tin can, and it wasn't worth $100. It was just a pile of junk. But his sister gave me some of that stuff, his clothing and everything. I gave to the Salvation Army, and I kept this watch, you know. And I got another one, too, but they were both busted when I got them. I've had the other one at the jeweler's for about 7 years, and they haven't fixed it yet, old Bill Bush. But I just kept that because he was a friend of mine, you know.
Yeah.
And I appreciate having it, because when I look at that, it reminds me of old Ted Leonard, you know. He trapped over in about 40 miles from McGrath.
Mm-hmm.
By himself all winter long.
Mm-hmm.
Stay there for 7 months.
Yeah.
Come out of there, and he never got bushy. Never got weird or anything. Like, he'd just be as normal when he came back to town as if he just left the day before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He worked for the miners out here. He worked for that old Walter Roman out there on Fish Creek, you know, and for the FE and that. But you knew those guys, and I felt more at ease in that era than I do today with the people I associate with today.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Maybe it's because people had more time for you. You know.
Well, like Mr.
I've gone over to people's houses to see them, and I don't do this too often, but well, often enough. Some people are so busy, they haven't got time to stop. They haven't got time to say, well, if they gee whiz, I can't talk to you right now or something. You know, and you just feel, well, they don't care that much, so you might as well forget them, you know. It's a sad situation. But I can go over to other people's places, and the minute you come in the house, well, come on in, Mac, you know, sit down, and we'll have a cup of coffee, and they'll start, you know, and then you feel at home. Well, that's the way it always used to be with the old-timers. They never thought something was more important than your presence, you know. You can tell when you go in the hospital, really, who cares about you.
Oh, that's true.
You know, who comes up to see you, you know, or calls up your family to find out how you're doing, you know. And sometimes it's not the people you think cared at all. Huh?
Oh, that's true. I just have to stop there.
I was married for life.
Yeah.
You know? I didn't realize that she thought about it different, you know.
Well, people look at things differently.
I know it. But you don't find that out a lot of times.
No.
Till it's too late. But, it's just how strong a commitment you make. Now, this gal, there's a relationship there, because that first woman I was married to, her mother had been married 3 times. Now, I should have thought about that. In fact, this girl had been in an orphanage down south for a while. They came. Important thing that came into my life as far as having, being able to be at peace with myself and other people was when I came to know Jesus as Savior and Lord. Because then I could see somewhat. We talk about, well, this person passed away, or why did my brother die, or why did that accident happen? Why does a little child have all those afflictions born with them or something, you know? And it seemed like there is a reason behind a lot of this, and the reason is to draw people to God. There's mm-hmm. no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
Our secretary down there at the Salvation Army lost her daughter. Her daughter disappeared. And she was found murdered down in out of Moses Lake mm-hmm. in Washington. Her and another girl, they were hitchhiking, and they were good kids. They were hitchhiking, and they had their plane fare to come up. They were just coming to venture to another, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're just about at the end of this tape. We have a little bit more. Let me think of what, I guess I can't think of much more, except it's pouring in. Can you think of something?
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Should try to find out what it's about. Jesus tells us to love one another over and over again. We should really find out what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not skip through it, you know. Because really, I think that's the solution to all of our problems.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. You know.
But it's pretty hard. People are not very accepting of other people and different ideas, I think.
And he tells us to love our enemies. You know, that's a thought that's against us, our natural self, completely. We don't want to do that. We want to. We want revenge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the Bible says, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. He says to do good for your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it works too. When we try to put some of these things into effect, there's a big difference. Action is a big loophole, I think, in the Christian walk. There's action is not there lots of times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking for myself, too.
Oh, yeah. You know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We all, yeah. Uh-huh.
If there's no action, then all we have is a lot of platitudes that mean nothing much. They sound nice and everything, and we can look at them, and they look good and everything, but if we're not doing them ourselves, well, then it amounts to nothing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very true.
Faith without works is dead, it says.
Mm. Well, okay, I...